Good morning. Good morning, planet Earth. It's almost 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time here in Skompton, Utah. July the 18th, 2023, Bob Limtok, a Tuesday, if such a day is meant to exist for all fuckers. I saw a green wire princess holding court at Trey's Knock-Up Saloon. She wore a black and white dress and red lipstick, and her eyes stared at your crotch all the time. She'd only see the package and not the man, and her killers stalked her all night long. She was the midnight siren, and her madness was on display to every three Bob Charlie in London. I kept watch for women like her, because this was the black heart of living, this time of darkness. And those who wandered the streets were worse than vampires. They were humans, motherfucker. I left Trey's and went onward to Old Shimbley's off of Puxton Street, not far from where King Leopold raped and killed that Christian nun 700 years ago. It was sacred ground to the poncy types that strolled like vicars and from place to place. Raped and killed, killed and raped, not in that order from what I can ascertain. At Shimbley's, I met Verona Devastonia. She was well known in Grinkentown for her beef-eater style boobula festies and other orgiastic adventures involving gorilla tape and vodka. She asked me if I wanted to see the king, and I said, "That old queen?" And we laughed. She made her bang selling smack to the dandies of London town and the finance freaks and the politicos. The whole Labour Party, really. They all knew her. She had dead man switches with half the barristers in England just to protect herself. "How you doing, Jack?" she asked, leering at me, nursing a gin and tonic in that badly lit pub. "I've been okay. Just got back from Syria." "What were you doing there, Jack?" "Oh, nothing. Just vacation." Verona threw back her head, rolled her eyes, and let out an ape laugh. I couldn't tell Verona the truth. "Hey, honey, I just got done cleaning up a mess for the U.S. Air Force. They accidentally killed 50 children at a school because one of their drone pilots was high on meth. So it was a cleanup job, janitorial work." I couldn't tell her that. She'd seen ugly things. She told me once she met a guy who said he worked the job that led to Princess Diana's death. And now that person who paid the contract, well, that person was the King of England. And what the fuck do you do with that info? Remember what happened to that nurse about a decade ago that leaked the information about the royal birth? She just ended up dead. You know, suicide, quote unquote. I said a bit more to Verona, but I had a meeting in Chelsea and I couldn't be late, so I had to let her go. I grabbed a car and took the ride out to the smelter where my new client was. He owned the place. He owned several places that provided specialized castings and metals for the aerospace industry. In 2012, his company had been contracted by a major airline to provide replacement turbine blades, but it was a budget thing. And they couldn't really afford to pay top dollar for good titanium. My new client, Marvin Till, told the company that these blades would cost less, but, you know, last half as long. The buyer heard cost less. He didn't hear the rest. At the smelter, I tipped the driver and he drove off. I wandered into the warehouse and Marvin was there with two well-dressed bodyguards. "Jack, my boy, it's been a while." Marvin looked drunk. But I never had an issue with drunken sots as long as they paid. Jack, I have a problem. You see, it turns out the airline company had planes falling out of the sky. And even though they blamed the avionics, the real truth was that the blades on the engines were burning out at altitude. And this was not supposed to become public. It was supposed to stay a secret. A young and eager reporter with Air and Space Weekly had interviewed Marvin, wanting to know if there was anything else to report, and one of his engineers overheard the interview. Making a long story short, the engineer met with the journalist, and she, Nikki Wahlstrom, was going to break the story in a few days. She hadn't turned in anything to her editor yet, not even a draft. But she was going to meet with him for breakfast, if you know what I mean. Jack, I already have the job done. They're at a place not far from Avon, you know, where Shakespeare did his thing. I need to drive out there. I gotta drive out there and clean the place, that's what Marvin said. I need to go take care of the bodies, really pretty much basic janitorial work. I got to the house near Avon around 3 a.m., the lights were off, and luckily the nearest neighbor lived a half a mile away. The cleaning went fine by the book, but there was something weird about the bodies. The engineer had been dead for an hour, but his flesh was still supple, still filled with blood, and his eyes were bloodshot and green. They kind of glowed. The journalist, Nikki, had a similar look, but despite having no pulse, she twitched periodically. All of these things were troubling issues that went away after I chopped them up and let them dissolve in the nitric acid. I looked like a groundskeeper for this job, and the water tank I towed behind my lorry was the actual dissolution tank for the body parts. I was driving to the coast to a friend to take the remains of what was left and dump it in a cesspool he had after the acid had neutralized. It was weird. About 30 minutes from my pal's place, there was a noise coming from the hitch between my truck and the tank, so I pulled over. It must have been almost 5 a.m., and the sun was still below the horizon. I inspected the hitch, and it looked fine, all except for a bluish goo. It kind of glowed, too. And then I heard it, a voice out of the darkness. I looked around, but I couldn't see anybody, but I heard it again. And this time it was clear, like screaming in my ear, "You are the stooge, buddy." It was in me, yelling and screaming, "You are the dummy, dummy." I had a flask of whiskey and some Xanax in the glove compartment, so I grabbed 5 pills and I took a swig, hoping some basic pharmacology would help. "You can't stop me that way, pal." "What do you want?" "I want you, buddy." I thought I was going insane. You do this work too long, you go crazy, you see things. I had this friend once, a cleaner from Detroit. He'd been doing the work for 30 years and then he just snapped. He went to the police and told them everything, gave them locations, even some evidence he kept as insurance. The cops took his statement, the cops took his evidence, the cops destroyed everything, and then the cops took him to a private institution in Canada. You know the places where the CIA's MKUltra used to erase the minds of housewives back in the 60s? A bit later, he committed suicide. Quote unquote. Yes, those types of suicides are really convenient for former clients and partners. So I didn't want to go crazy. But I'm not sure I have a choice. "Buddy, you think you're going crazy, but you're not." The voice went on to describe something weird to me, a voice inside my head. It talked about the 7-dimensional war between the Jugbeens and the Klefites. They hated each other, They ruled the universe. They ruled the timelines. They were always at war. For 2 million years, they'd been at war, an overlapping time war, and all of history had become unstable. Zegon, the Clefite, he had a basic job. When some temporal event goes awry, you need to clean things up. You need to take care of business. Make it look like nothing fucking happened. Zegon was a cleaner too, just like me. But unlike me, his technology was a little bit more advanced. Funny thing. The hit on the journalist and the engineer, it was a botched thing. It went the wrong way. Originally, the story was going to be about corrupt business practices and bad fan blades and other stuff to deal with airlines and the aerospace industry. And the deaths of hundreds of people died in these plane crashes. Although people quickly forget and they get back on the planes. But then the story changed. The engineer had been working on a new kind of black box, one that utilized quantum entanglement. It utilized quantum entanglement to share data instantly with ground stations anywhere in the fucking world. Remember that plane that disappeared in 2014 over the Indian Ocean? No one knew what happened, but Zegon knew. And if that black box had existed then, others would have known too. And Zegon couldn't have that. Zegon cleaned up history. If something was supposed to happen, it would. If something was the result of a time traveler or fractor committing a causality error, it would be sanitized. If a black box existed that allowed recording remotely, instantaneously, no matter where or when the plane was, this would impact Zegon's employers and the Clefites generally. And this would be bad, buddy. Hey, buddy. Yeah? Do you believe me, buddy? I don't know. Where are you? Well, that goop you touched contained regenerative nanites. And these here nanites contain self-organizing capabilities for tracking and recording, similar to what that, you know, engineer was working on. I don't really understand it. I do basic work. I just clean shit. Anywho, you're not really talking to me, but I'm 34 minutes in the future at your pal's place. You know the place you're headed to. What are you doing there? Well, I'm cleaning. You killed him? No, pal. He's been transported out of this timeline. We like to study you turds. Study? Yeah, it's not my job. I make minimum wage. But the really smart guys and their AI slaves, they love studying you and the other hairless monkeys. At that moment, I could feel my heart beating faster. Just go with it, buddy. They say it's painless. What is? Oh, pal, death. This kind of death doesn't hurt. Once the nanites reach your brainstem, it'll be done, pal. But before you go, I just gotta say I love your work, buddy. My body collapsed underneath me as the sun began to rise. I had nothing worthwhile to remark upon, to remember. No wise words to say, no... nothing. To put on my gravestone. No life passing before my eyes. I had 2 failed marriages, an unpaid mortgage, and a house filled with dust and bad memories. It wasn't much to say goodbye to. There was no epitaph. I could feel the parts of me being torn apart as my body dissolved around me, and yet It wasn't really a bad feeling. I felt no pain. I could sense myself falling into pieces, but there was no burden of pain. The only thing I hoped as that last bit of life drained out of me is that Zegon would do a good job cleaning up the mess. Oh, Dan, you're crazy. What was that about? You don't need to fucking know. Next topic. So I'm going to read something. If you're on Twitter, you may know this guy. His name on the Mises Institute website is Robert R. Arrow, A-R-O. And it was published on 7/14/2023. Title of the article is Basel 3 Endgame. Econ Circus, I think. Econ Circus. Earlier this week, Federal Reserve Vice Chair for Supervision, Michael S. Barr, delivered a speech called Holistic Capital Review, sharing thoughts on the banking sector's existing capital requirements imposed by the Fed. He firmly stated, "The existing approach to capital requirements is sound." Illustrated through nondescript mentions, despite this alleged soundness, he did find some ways to improve the fatally flawed system. With respect to risk-based requirements, the international standards were developed through a rigorous, lengthy process, have been under discussion for nearly a decade, and will improve on the extent to which capital requirements fully reflect the risk imposed. The risk posed by different banks engaged in a variety of activities. There is a pattern of first mentioning that everything is fine, followed by ways to make improvements. With respect to stress testing, I believe that stress capital buffer framework is sound, that the stress capital buffer framework is sound. At the same time, I believe that the stress test should continue to evolve to better capture risk. It's all part of the plan, literally. They call it Basel III Endgame, explained by the vice chair. An important aspect of my proposals will be to implement the changes to the risk-based capital requirements, referred to as the Basel III Endgame, which are intended to ensure that our minimum capital requirements require banks to hold adequate capital against their risk-taking. It comes off rather vague, but central bankers could force banks to have stricter capital requirements, such as holding more cash or attempting to get banks to engage in less risky behavior as defined by regulators. In the eyes of the regulator, banking failures such as Silicon Valley Bank seem more to do with the bank's faulty capital structure than problems caused by the Fed, as explained. Some industry representatives claim that inadequate capital had nothing to do with those bank failures. I disagree. It was an unsuccessful attempt by SVB to raise capital that caused uninsured depositors to look more closely at how the bank was capitalized. He went so far as to say, If SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, had enough long-term debt outstanding, it might have reduced the risk of a run by uninsured depositors. When it comes to diagnosing problems within the banking system, we cannot trust the central banker to blame the organization paying his salary. However, the takeaway from this would be the continuous need for regulatory and supervisory enhancements in the system. We are expected to believe these improvements in capital structure will ensure the prevention of future bank failures, as if this will mark the final implementation of rules for time on end. Whatever they decide, they should not call it an endgame, as this game is not meant to end. So yeah, Econ Circus, Robert Arrow. This comes from Mises.org, Mises.org. And I'm going to do my best to translate some of this because I'm not an expert in the banking system. I'm more or less just a hobo. I think that the way I interpret this is kind of the first stages of blame storming, which is to say, if there is a problem in the banking system, it's clearly not my problem, it's yours. And as far as Basel III being the endgame regulatory framework, it very well could be. But if you listen to my podcast, I think I've said repeatedly for the last 2 years, this game is going to end really fucking badly. The end game for us is not going to be a soft landing. If you interpret a Pontiac GTO going 130 miles per hour, hitting a brick wall, as a soft landing, then yeah, maybe. But if you think it's going to be some type of slow drift into a restorative, reparative, deflationary recession that's going to allow us to keep doing the same stupid shit we've been doing for the last 100 years, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's in the cards. I'm pretty certain Jerome Powell knows this. In fact, if he has a spray can, he probably went to his helicopter on hot standby and sprayed on the side of it, soft landing, because that's what it's going to be. Jerome Powell getting to the helicopter, getting to the rescue ship as soon as he fucking can. Next topic. Dan, that was boring. Yeah, it was boring banking bullshit, but whatever. This next article is from Zero Hedge. Headline: U.S. NATO weapons stockpile at dangerously low levels, top Air Force general says. This was written by Mimi Nguyen Lee via the Epic Times, but it was published on Zero Hedge. The weapons stockpile of the United States and its North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, allies are becoming dangerously low with no short-term solutions, according to a top U.S. Air Force commander. General James Hecker, the commander of U.S. Air Forces Europe and Air Forces Africa, made the remarks at the Chief of Air Staff's Global Air and Space Chiefs Conference in London. Wow, say that 10 times fast. It was reported by Breaking Defense. The Air Force General urged NATO allies to think seriously about their stockpiles. I think it's very important that we kind of take stock of where we are in our weapons state across the 32 nations of NATO. And we're getting way down compared to where we were, General Hecker said on a panel with the air chiefs of the United Kingdom and Sweden at a conference, reported the outlet. And it's probably going to get better. Well, it's not in the short term, but we've got to make sure that long term we have the industrial base that can increase what we have, he said at the July 12 through 13 event, urging all NATO nations to start making deeper investments. The United States is at roughly half the number of fighter squadrons it had compared to when it engaged in Operation Desert Storm, a U.S.-led operation that started in January 1991 as part of a response to the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, you know, that George Bush suggested they do. The general said, he added, there's been a similar decrease in fighter squadrons for the U.K. So we don't have nearly what we had at the heart of the Cold War, he continued. Now you add that we're giving a lot of munitions away to Ukrainians, which I think is exactly what we need to do, but now we're getting dangerously low, and sometimes, in some cases, even too low. But we don't have enough, and we need to get industry on board to help us so we can get this going. The United States has provided the Ukraine with over $41.3 billion in security assistance since Russia invaded the Ukraine in February 2022, according to the U.S. State Department as of July 7. This encompasses more than $15 billion in weapons and equipment taken from U.S. military stocks to the Ukraine since the Russian invasion. It comes after the Biden administration last week announced it would send to the Ukraine the controversial cluster munitions which have since arrived in the country. The cluster munitions, after they are fired, open in midair and release bomblets over a wide area to strike several targets simultaneously. They can be delivered by planes, artillery, and missiles. More than 100 countries, including two-thirds of NATO allies, have banned such weapons because they can cause many civilian casualties. Cluster munitions can be fired using artillery that the United States has provided to the Ukraine, and the Pentagon has a large stockpile of them that were facing decommissioning if it wasn't for Ukraine's voiced need for more ammunition. The Biden administration said the cluster munitions will enable the Ukrainians to continue their war effort with the ordnance they need, while the United States and others who supply the Ukraine ramp up their production of artillery shells to further assist Ukraine's defense. We don't see this as a permanent solution, but rather a bridge, Colin Call, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, said at a July 7th briefing. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, no fucking relation to me, said at a separate briefing, "We are reaching a point in this conflict because of the dramatically high expenditure rates of artillery by the Ukraine and by Russia, where we need to build a bridge from where we are today to when we have to enough, you know, monthly production of unitary rounds, that unitary rounds alone will suffice to give Ukraine what it needs." So as a result, this is the moment to begin the construction of that bridge so that there isn't any period over this summer or heading into this. I can't read the rest of this bullshit. You can read the very ending of this bullshit. I don't fucking care. I'm going to tell you my Sovietological impression of this story. I believe the United States government is using up munitions. Not to fight the Russians. I think the Ukraine war is mostly bullshit. Now, oh yeah, people could be dying. As I've said many times, every great American psyop's also a snuff flick. People do die for realism. But the purpose is not money laundering. It's not. The purpose is not to fight off the Russians. If they want to launder money, the United States government has had a relatively easy way to do that since 1913. They can get whatever money they fucking need, okay? If you want to understand how easy it is, look into the support for BLM and Antifa in 2020 and 2021. You know, I don't know how to put this, but Ian Miles Wrong and Andy No Clue didn't really dig deep enough. These were 100% government funded, and they were funded via money laundering, as the government does through NGOs. So the Ukraine is not about that. It's not about money laundering. It's not about fighting the Russians. But it very well could be about using up munitions that some colonel, some general, some officers in the United States military might decide to use against their own fucking government at some point. Because we're very much nearing the point where insurrection and mutiny in the military, I would expect it to start happening. So that's why they're doing it. That's my opinion. Next topic. Dan, it's about fighting. No, it's not about fighting the Russians. It's about money. Why do they fucking need a Byzantine method of money laundering? Why do they need this ornate, absurdly, Rube Goldberg, overly complex way to launder money, shithead? They don't. So it's not about money laundering. It's not about Putin. But it very well could be about U.S. Army Rangers who wake up one day out of their fucking daze and remember their goddamn oath and turn their cannons on Washington, D.C. It could be about that shithead. It could be about Marines storming the fucking Capitol. And the one thing the people in charge don't want is those people to have ammo. So they will use up the small arms ammo. They'll use up the artillery rounds. They'll use up the missiles. They'll use it all up. Yeah, next topic. Dan, I can't believe you. You don't believe the... Yeah, I don't believe any of that garbage. And another thing before I leave the Ukraine war, if you don't want people researching the collapse of the Arctic permafrost, the Ukraine war is a fucking godsend. Not uppercase, lowercase god. It's a godsend. If you want to keep prying eyes out of the fucking Arctic as it collapses, holy fuck, has the Ukraine war paid off. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Famine is the oldest, most reliable, and most popular way elites have to kill off the masses. If they want to kill us all off, or kill off a percentage of us, you know, historically, famine is the way. It's not killer fucking bioweapons. It's not, you know, some type of massive scheme to increase surgeries by 1,000,000,000% to sterilize everybody as the basis of some gender strategy. It's not that either. It's famine. It's always been famine. I'll tell you something about famine. There is no vaccine for famine. You can't take a drug for famine. If you're starving to death, horse dewormer won't fucking help you. Even if you figure out they're starving you, it doesn't fucking matter. By the time you realize it, you're going to be primarily focused on getting food for your family. People who die slowly of famine usually start going crazy by week 5, and crazy people who are hungry create more chaos and death, and that's a knock-on effect. That's not a bug, that's a feature. People who are focused on survival provide the elite with more time to get out of Dodge, to escape. That's it. That's it. If you were to ask me what is more likely in that Occam's razor sense, if the powers that be wanted to kill billions of people, what's more likely? And ignore the fucking Kissinger quotes. Ignore all that other deep state bullshit. What is more likely? A highly ornate and complex campaign of poisoning people with viruses and vaccines, yeah? Or just starving them the fuck to death? Which is how they've always fucking done it. Hunger predictably degrades your ability to reason, to think. It does. And it's not just about the calories. You know, if you want to think about the Norman Borlaug miracle, quote unquote, it's also about the nutritional value of the food itself. Okay? If your body is starved of nutrition, to include things like vitamins and minerals, your ability to think is impacted. Your ability to be aware of the world is impacted. And then, if you introduce, you know, no more calories, you've got people already primed and crazy. And if you mind fuck them for 3+ years with high intensity military psychological warfare, you got yourself a spring-loaded cannon of fucking crazy. All you need are 5 weeks without food, and watch this country and probably other countries implode. Like Dr. Freckles said, famine is the oldest, most reliable, most popular way the elites kill off people. Yeah, viruses and bacterias and other types of problems swoop in afterwards when your immune system is trashed because you haven't had a decent meal in, like, I don't know, 2 months. But that's not the ticket. It's the fucking famine. Next topic. Dan, they want to keep us fed. Why do you think they want to take you to a FEMA camp? Why do you think they want to use up diesel fuel to take your fat ass to a FEMA camp to feed you? Why do you think that? Why do you think they're going to truck in food to your city? And by the way, if you lived in a city in America in 2020, you should understand this by now. You are already at the FEMA camp. They're not going to take you anywhere. Alex Jones is full of shit. Dan, I can't believe you're so racist, don't you? Here's another fear monkey. This is an article from the Washington Examiner, and I don't know if I'm going to read the whole fucking thing, because today these articles just seem dumb as fuck. They continue to seem dumb as fuck. This article's headline, San Francisco reparations panelist says white men are danger to society. This was written by Brady Knox for the Washington Examiner and published on July the 3rd, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. A panelist on San Francisco's reparations committee said white men are a danger to society. She made other statements deriding white men as well. Nicole Cunningham, one of 15 members of the city's African American Reparations Advisory Committee, decried straight white men, as abusive and actively dangerous to society in an interview with The Telegraph. Straight white men are abusive. Straight white men are serial killers, Cunningham said. They have the most. I watch these shows. The most serial killers, she continued. Straight white men are the ones who are shooting up the schools, right? So they are a danger to society, Cunningham added. She did make sure to clarify, but not all of them. She continued to bash white men for not supporting her advisory committee's reparations recommendations, which include $5 million to every black resident of the city. So if anything, white men pose more of a harm than support and help. And then you got to remember their ancestors are the ones who were standing out there. Shut the fuck up. My ancestors were starved out of Ireland a little more than 150 fucking years ago. Maybe 160. My ancestors, starving, showed up in the United States, were handed a musket and a Bible and told to go kill people. People they didn't fucking know. And then after that, they were treated like third-class citizens. My ancestors, for hundreds of years, were captured by the English and turned into fucking slaves. And the only reason why we don't have a middle passage that adds up to the same fucking number as yours is because there are not as many of us. There aren't. Sorry. Is this to say that what happened to African Americans should be discounted? Hell no. It was a crime, a historical crime. But what I'm not going to do is give one red fucking cent to another person that's been abused because they want to tell me, well, historically, my people have been abused. I'll let you on a little secret. In 2007, did I say 2007? No, I didn't say 1897. I didn't say 1797 or 1907. In the year 2007, I was at the Detroit Athletic Club. I was there as a consultant, and at one point during lunch, one of the people, a person that has influence at a place called Henry Ford Medical Center, he asked me a question. He said, Dan, are you Irish? Like I said, 2007. And I said, yeah, I'm Irish. He said, I didn't know Irish people program computers. October 2007. Not 1897, not 1707, the year 2007 Bo Blimp Talk. A motherfucker didn't know Irish people could program computers. Probably didn't know that one of the greatest physicists of the last 100 years was Irish. Probably didn't know we also know how to do math, and we don't just have to be lawyers and cops. But I'll tell you something, brothers and sisters, I dealt with that prejudice my whole fucking life, starting back when I was a kid. So if you want to feed me this bullshit that there are people in our society who have to get reparations, fine. When am I getting mine? Buy me a shack in Ireland, I'll move back there despite the fucking Goat King. I'll move back to fucking Ireland. Give me my Liberia, someplace on the coast of that green rock. On the other hand, maybe I don't deserve reparations because I wasn't the one that was starved. And maybe your fat ass, Miss Cunningham, wasn't starved either. Maybe you're full of shit. Next topic. Oh, Dan, I can believe what I said, and fuck you. And if you want to call it racist, how can I phrase this? I don't give a fuck. Dan, it's racist, right? You're racist, Dan, if you don't want reparations. You're racist, Dan, if you don't want to pay them for their losses. There were Irish slaves along with African slaves. Did you know that? There were Irish women and men who were beaten, tortured, and raped. Did you know that? Did you know that the government of England would have been okay with every Irish person dead at one point in the 19th century? Not ancient history, motherfucker. Only about 160 years ago. So please, take your shit and go to another store. Dan, I can't believe you. You're like a janitor. Yeah, I know. Oh, here is an article from Zero Hedge, headline, CDC used journal to promote mass coffee filters despite unreliable and unsupported data, new analysis. This again was published in the Epoch Times, which is a principal journal of the Mossad and the CIA, and it was authored by Megan Redshaw. JD. I hate fucking lawyers. A new analysis of studies in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention flagship scientific journal found the agency promoted the effectiveness of masks using unreliable data. I'm going to stop right here, okay? This article will not help you. Is it directionally correct? Yes. The coffee filters did nothing against the make-believe pandemic. But the silent part, the part that these shitheads leave out, is that the pandemic was bullshit. 100%, there was no wet market problem. There was no Wuhan death lab. It didn't happen. I don't give a shit if you look at my hours of video from monitoring Seattle near Pill Hill in 2020 and 2021. I don't give a fuck. If you still think there was a pandemic, you still got to put a fucking coffee filter on your face. I don't give a fuck. But what I will tell you is those coffee filters probably enabled one of the most tragic periods of child trafficking in human history. That probably during 2020 and 2021, a lot of kids were abused, stolen, trafficked, moved around. And you know why it was so fucking easy? Because people had coffee filters on their faces. And they put coffee filters on their kids' faces. Well, not really their kids, the kids they were trafficking. And I don't know how to phrase this either. Did you know that one of the ways people communicate is with their faces? Did you know that? Did you know if you cover it up, you remove that ability? If a kid is in a 7-Eleven and the kid is scared, with the coffee filter off, you might notice that. But in 2020 and 2021, when most of you motherfuckers hardened your hearts to your neighbors and played the kabuki dance pretending it was all okay, and some of you knew it was bullshit and you still played the dance, you couldn't fucking tell. You couldn't tell that that kid was scared to death. Here's what I'll say about the coffee filter once more before we go on. And I've said this so many times. It allowed pedophiles. It allowed child abusers. It allowed slavers to move kids around with greater ease. That's what it did. If you want to say it was accidental, it was inadvertent, okay. Okay, but why do you vote for these fuckers? Why do you give a shit if Trump or Biden wins? They're all equally gonna fuck you. Why do you care? If you're gonna tell me they're incompetent and stupid to the point that they would create a crisis that led to massive suicides, overdoses, untreated chronic illness, actual death from despair, businesses being destroyed, how the fuck do you rationalize voting? How the fuck do you rationalize being a Republican or a Democrat in a situation like that, shithead? Or a Libertarian? Oh, you think next time it's going to work? But Dan, next time we vote, it's going to work because of why? Because of why? Because of some irrational basis that has no logic behind it? Why? Why, when you vote again in 2024, is it going to work this time? Next topic. I just can't, I can't, I just don't even know what to say. I don't have words for it, you know. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Talking about the permafrost or tipping points or punctuated equilibrium or the frost line makes the climate change zealots nervous and leaves the opposition mostly confused. What does that mean? Well, for the record, once again, based upon my own experience, I do believe there's something wrong with the environment. And it's entirely plausible that the thing that is wrong, the thing that is going on right now, has zero to do with your car, zero to do with your SUV, zero to do with whether or not you eat cheeseburgers. In fact, if you added up all those things, it would be pissing in the wind gnat farts compared to what might be going on. And that is the collapse of the Arctic system. Something that was probably always going to happen. Always. If you mention the permafrost to people, especially climate change freaks, if you mention 100 years ago a Russian scientist in Siberia cut off a slab of, you know, woolly mammoth and ate a 12,000-year-old steak, and then you mention that the current definition of permafrost is frozen, and if you can hear that noise, that's just the pipes behind me. I don't have a choice about that. Fucking years ago, Russian scientists ate woolly mammoth steak that was 12,000 fucking years old. Under what circumstances could permafrost mean frozen for at least 2 years? It doesn't, but they did redefine it. And if you mention the frost line to people, you'll get blank stares. And this includes farmers. This includes people who should know what the fuck a frost line is. If you mention tipping points or punctuated equilibrium to a quote-unquote climate scientist, they'll shake their head and walk away. Why? Because these are the forbidden thoughts, brothers and sisters. These are the topics we're not supposed to discuss. We can claim BLM and Antifa are setting fires all over Canada. And who the fuck knows what's going on in Siberia? Because how can I say this? The Ukraine war offers cover. But what if the reality is what's going on with the environment was always going to happen? That our government made a piss-poor attempt at managing it and lying to us about it and gaslighting us about it, basically blaming the victim, which is, I mean, come on, that's government 101. What if there's nothing they can do? What if there's nothing you can do? If you stopped eating cheeseburgers, if you stopped driving your SUV, if everybody stopped using their stuff today, the tipping point's already been crossed. And it was probably crossed 100 years ago. So we could all go back to the 19th century and masturbate to our craft wine until the temperature gets to Venus syndrome and it would do nothing. What if that's the truth? You see, it feels better to think there's a solution. But what if there are some problems you just have to endure? What if there are some challenges you have to face? And what if the only answer to the question, how do we survive, is freedom? What if that's always been the only answer? What if truly, on a long enough timeline, all forms of government are an extinction-level event? Like Dr. Freckles said, you talk about the permafrost, you talk about tipping points, you talk about punctuated equilibrium or the frost line with a climate change zealot, and they get nervous. You talk about these same issues with a quote-unquote opposition, and they just give you blank stares. In my view, that tells you exactly where the fucking truth is. Maybe. I'm a Sovietologist, right? Next topic. Thank you. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The only place U.S. soldiers are allowed to carry weapons, you know, with extra rights, quote-unquote, is overseas, killing poor brown people, Dr. Freckles. If you deconstruct what a lot of liberals and progressives, excuse me, I gotta drink some coffee here. This is bad. I apologize. I'm not in the best form today. I'm not in the best form for lots of reasons. Once again, the Dr. Freckles quote, the only place the U.S. soldiers are allowed to carry weapons with extra privileges is overseas, killing poor brown people. I was an Army soldier in the 1990s. Did you know that in the 1990s, the Clinton administration created a policy that hasn't been removed, which forbade U.S. military from carrying private weapons and weapons within their armory on post? It forbade them. Like, yeah, the MPs could carry weapons, but ordinary soldiers, you didn't get to carry weapons. Did you know that? Well, I read a comment in a news article the other day where this one liberal was saying, well, you know, the only people that should have the right to carry a weapon of war are soldiers. Shithead. Soldiers hadn't had the right to carry those fucking weapons on post for 30 fucking years, shithead. What the fuck are you talking about? They don't have that right, and when they're off post, they're just as fucked as the rest of us when it comes to that privilege, shithead. So what the fuck are you talking about? And then if we go into the Obama administration, which is, you know, recent history, and how they went after veterans and soldiers to take their weapons away, you sound even less intelligent. You sound like someone deeply fucking confused. Maybe you wore the coffee filter too fucking long and your brain is oxygen deprived. Newsflash. U.S. soldiers have no more fucking privileges on post than you do with respect to guns. And off post, they have the same privileges you do. So if a liberal says only soldiers should be allowed, what they really mean is this. The only time you have a right to use a semi-automatic carbine is if you're in a foreign country stealing the shit from poor people. Then you can carry an AR-15. You can carry a fucking machine gun. You can have cluster bombs as long as you're killing poor brown people or in general, just poor people. That's what they mean. And here's one more nugget before we continue. I don't think they're going to collect any of your fucking guns. I think it's another fear monkey. Just like the drag queen story time bullshit, just like the BLM Antifa that I videotaped up close, a lot of Ian Miles wrong, Andy no clue bullshit. If you want to spend all day scared they're going to take your gun, let me give you a piece of advice. Do not buy your gun at Cabela's. Don't buy your gun anywhere you got to fill out paperwork. If you did that, you cut off your own fucking balls. Nobody did that. You did. Buy black market. Okay? Buy private sale. The time where you can go to a fucking store and buy your gun in a way that protects your privacy, that time was over before I was fucking born. So get over that shit, dummy. Next topic. Damn, I can't believe you're not... I'm not afraid they're going to take my guns, because I'm of the opinion they have way bigger fucking problems right now. But we'll see, right? Here's an article, once again from Zero Hedge, but it was originally published on the Epoch Times, the authored by Sophie Lee. Headline: homeless RV sewage is going into the ocean in Southern California. Oh my God. 9,000 gallons of sewage a month are going into the wastewater system. That's the storm drain system, not the sewer. The storm drain carries it straight to Santa Monica Bay, said Barry Coe, regarding the monthly wastewater of 600 recreational vehicles that are being used by homeless persons in the Harbor Gateway area, located in the far southern part of Los Angeles where he lives. According to the 2023 point-in-time count released last month by the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, government, there are over 9,280, you can double that number, homeless people living in about 6,800 RVs, double that number, in Los Angeles County. And all of that, he said, is being released into the storm drains, blah, blah. You know what? I'm going to stop right here because this is another example of giving you some group of people to target, that if you're a normie and you got your Fannie, Freddie, Commie, Fed loan to buy your Fannie, Freddie house flipping enterprise, you can think about homeless people and mock them and make fun of them. I don't care, shithead. Okay? That problem is not going away. In 2019, prior to the monkey herpes, prior to the pandemic, prior to the BLM Antifa Andy No Clue bullshit, in 2019, the people of Seattle suggested moving all the homeless people to McNeil Island. If you go to Google Maps, you can see how big McNeil Island is. Compared to when I was a kid, the Puget Sound is a Dead Sea. Compared to when I was a kid, it's not the same place. The last time I went fishing in the Puget Sound, I pulled out a flounder with tumors. Yeah. And so if the suggestion was in 2019 that all 20 or 30,000 homeless people in King County and Pierce County could live on McNeil Island, if that was the rational suggestion in 2019, that tells you exactly where people are today. They're being directed to hate. To hate on the home. Oh, they're all drug users, Dan. They're all criminals. What if I proposed to you that at least 50% of the people weren't? They weren't mentally ill. They weren't drug users. They just don't have a fucking place to live because you, motherfucker, think your garage is a bungalow worth 1.5 million bucks. What if that's closer to the fucking truth, shithead? But here's the good news. It doesn't matter. More and more people are going to become homeless in the coming weeks and months. More and more people will be in their RVs if they're lucky, or they're going to be like me in 2 months, a backpack, and probably dying of heat stroke. And ask me if I fucking care at this point. Ask me if I care if the good Lord takes me home at this point. Given the hate, given the direction of all this bile towards people that have lost everything, towards families living on the edge of nowhere. Yeah, there are criminals as homeless. You want me to blow your fucking mind? I worked at Redmond, Microsoft campus. There are criminals at Microsoft campus. There are criminals at Goldman Sachs. You want me to really blow your fucking mind, shithead? There are criminals at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., who wear nice suits and get paid a shitload of money. And, oh yeah, guess what? They're drug users, too. And a lot of them are batshit crazy. I mean, they're trying to tell you a lot of shit these days. You should see through that, really. You say the homeless are criminals. I can tell you the criminals are everywhere. You say the homeless are drug users. I can tell you at the highest echelons of this degenerate neo-Stalinist hellhole, there are also drug users there too. You want to tell me they're mentally ill scumbags? Take a look at President Biden, dumbass. No, these are nice excuses for you to harden your heart. But as Harry Bultum has said about Sodom, the Lord didn't destroy Sodom just because they were all being wacky with the orgies. That might have been a factor, but that wasn't the principal factor. The Lord destroyed Sodom because they hardened their hearts towards their neighbor. Because they turned their gaze away from the misery. Because they pretended the pain wasn't there. Because they blamed all the shit out in the Pacific shit ocean, where, by the way, Fukushima's gonna dump more radioactive waste, dumbass. They blame them for that, you know. They hardened their hearts, and so the Lord destroyed Sodom. If the Lord destroyed Sodom for the things we can read in the Old Testament, ask yourself what the fuck he's going to do to us. You should hope you're an atheist, right? But if you're an atheist and you simply believe in the laws of nature, what the fuck do you think happens next? We have an opportunity in this country, even today, to heal. But the only way we can get there is through the truth. And the truth is not being told by this shitty article. The truth is not being told by Andy No Clue and Ian Miles Wrong. You can show me all the alt journalists you read, send me all their fucking links, and they can tell me how crazy the homeless people are. My God, people, take a look at your government. It's a fucking madhouse. But they get paid pretty fucking well, douchebag. Yeah. That's what I think of your argument about them all being criminals and crazy and mentally ill. Man, I worked with six-figure fucks at Microsoft. The drug use and the mental illness, the homeless don't have anything on those shitheads. The blue badge is there. What are you going to do about them? You're going to vaporize them? If you like this podcast, I really don't know why, but if you do, that's great. If you like it, I need a lot of help. I am going to be without a residence in a few months, really more like 5 weeks, and I will do my best to survive, but if I end up on the streets, the podcast is probably over. That's just reality. And if you take seriously my view of the future, the podcast is probably over anyways. But could I use some help right now so that my life could be a little less painful? Sure. Guess what? You have neighbors right down the block that could use your help too. You probably have family members that could use your help. You probably have people you haven't spoken to in months or years because you keep thinking there's going to be a special fucking time where you're going to have the opportunity. I don't know how to put this. The opportunity is now, shithead. Before you donate to my podcast, take care of your food, your water, your shelter. Before you donate to it, if there are people in your life that need help, help them. If you've set aside food for your pets, your dog, your cat, your parrot, my special heart is for the dog, make sure you're thinking about your dog too. Make sure you have food for 6 months for the dog if you have food for 6 months for your family. And if you've done all these things, also remember this, I think life is about to get fucking crazy, but do I think it's the end of the world? No. Do I think most people, including me, have any fucking clue about the hardship that's coming? No. And by the way, it's all good to get into healthy shape, you should, but if you're really worried about losing weight right now, focus on getting into shape, focus on nutrition, focus on whatever vitamins and minerals you need because, frankly, your food's not giving it to you. And pretty much, take advantage of this time. Before you give a random stranger any of your fucking money, take care of yourself. Try to find some joy. Try to fight the darkness by not being dark. Try to fight the clouds by bringing out the sun. Try to fight the devil through prayer. There are things you can do in your life, and sometimes they need resources. So before you send me any money, make sure you also take care of yourself. But if you've taken care of all this, and you still have a pile of hookers and cocaine and gold, because you've been a janitor for many years, then you can send me your money. You can send me your cash. You can send me your gold. There's a link to PayPal in the notes. You click on the link and you send me as much as you want to, and I could use as much as you're willing to give, or as little. I have a few donors who are extremely generous, and I've come to depend upon them. And in some ways it makes me sad because by this time I'd always hoped maybe I'd have more people who listen and can afford to donate. But that's not reality either, especially if you take seriously my words. Okay? A time is not too far off where podcasting and YouTubing and hijacking artificially intelligent algorithms to write a new screenplay. A time is coming where all your apps and all your Bitcoin and all your fucking 401ks will turn to fucking vapor and blow away. And in that world, having a podcast is pretty fucking meaningless. So yeah, can I use your help? Sure. Like I said, there are probably people right down your street, people you might even know who could use your help too, but they're too proud and they're too gaslit and they're too abused by bullshit they get off their ironically named device to ask for help. So maybe what you can do today before you give some old random burnout your money, maybe you can walk down the street and say hello to a neighbor you haven't spoken to in years. Maybe that's the first step. It's Tuesday. Tuesday, July the 18th, 2023, almost 9 a.m. in the time of Bo Blimp Doc. If I sounded angry today, I wonder why. Have a great day.